Everybody, welcome to Green Shoots. I'm Ryan Ballinger. Great to have you with us. Matt Welter is our guest. He is the man behind Dormy House, which is a really interesting, unique, affordable housing concept that is really geared toward golf adjacency for folks working in the golf world and really thinking about housing and living conditions relative to people who are working at these kind of far-flung places that people like you and I love to go visit and play golf. So, Matt, first, thanks for being here. One, can you give
Thanks
me
for
kind of
having me. Yeah.
the impetus for Dormy House, plus what we talked about a little bit beforehand, your background in this space that got you into this part of the housing space?
Yeah. So it, I took a road less traveled, but also at the same time, kind of traveled by many who graduated around the time that I did, which was 2010. Graduated degree in economics from Indiana University and got a job out of school. Didn't know really what I wanted to do. Didn't like the job, so I became a caddy. I caddied at a club in Michigan, where I was connected with a club down in Naples that had a vast caddy yard of English and Scottish and Irish guys. And my goal by becoming a caddy was not necessarily to do that my whole life, but to really to live overseas and live in some unique locations that were afforded me by having a job that I could travel and live anywhere I chose to. So spent a few years caddying. I caddied, like I said, down in Florida. I also lived in St. Andrews and caddied at King's Barns and did a couple of rounds all over the country of Scotland. The Old Course, Royal Dornoch, just to name a couple, and really kind of lived out this experience. And in the interim, I was picking brains of members or players that I was caddying for over in Scotland, and was always asking what advice would you give an enterprising young man? And they always gave me different answers. But one of the things that a lot of them had in common was that in time, they'd had a job or a business, and they'd invested in real estate, and that was what grew their wealth and afforded them the ability to, belong at these high-end clubs or travel. And so, with that in mind, I moved back home, started a little. It was going to be investing in real estate, and I had this 20-year plan. So I came home and I took my savings and bought one of these little chopped up kind of houses that was just an apartment and several apartments. And within a year, a guy came to me and said he wanted to sell a building. And it's like, well, I don't have any money and this and that. And he said, oh, I'll sell it to you, seller finance, no down payment. I was like, well, okay, what's the risk here? And talked to an accountant and he was like, well, there's no risk. I mean, there's a risk that you obviously have to sell it, but so I did that and things kind of, took off from there and got into the redevelopment space and then the development space and management. So everything that I build or redevelop or own, I also manage. And one of my goals was to join the Dunes Club, which is Mike Kaiser's course, his first course that he built in New Buffalo, Michigan. And I'm from Valparaiso, Indiana, which is about a 35, 40-minute drive from there. And
Yep, I know Valpo.
yeah, you do. Why do you know Valpo?
So one of my friends who, well, kind of almost a family member by a couple of generations removed, we're like family. We go on a golf trip every year. He's a doctor in Valpo. Went to visit him actually after the first U.S. Senior Women's Open Chicago Golf Club, and we had a great time in Valpo. I love the city.
That's aw what's his name? I'm sorry, I'm going off track. You're
It's
going off
okay.
places I know.
Shout out to Dr. George LeBrandi, the gardener as we call him, but George LeBrandi is from Valpo, but
Okay.
he grew up more toward Newcastle, Pennsylvania. So he's been there probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years at this point.
Well, I'll have to, I don't know him, but I'll have to look him up and say, hey, I know Ryan. Guys,
He's a good player in his own right. I'll give him that cred.
yeah, exactly. Well, anyways, I digress. Back to kind of how this all worked out, and joined the Dunes Club. It was one of my many things I put on paper, like, hey, I want to be a billionaire. I want to do this. I want to do that, because I just wanted to shoot for the stars. That was a piece of advice that I got. So I was invited to join. And after that, my dad was like, hey, we should go on the Kaiser Golf Trail kind of trips and start trying to play some of Mike's other courses. So the first place we went was Cabot in Nova Scotia. So Cabot Cape Breton, they call it now. We land and drive up to Inverness, 3.5 hour drive, one road town. And I get there, and within a day, I realized, like, wow, there's a lot of employees here. So I started asking the Caddies and employees, like, how many people work here? Where do you all live? And they were just giving me these crazy horror stories. So with that in mind, with my background of caddying and my not just my background, but my concern for these employees, I came home and put pen to paper and worked with an architect, obviously, and came up with this design that was basically designed to meet all of the federal ADA guidelines, not be too not have be too long to have to get into steel or weird expanses or weird footings or anything, no elevators, all that kind of stuff. Basically, how do I build the most affordable construction project possible that can house the most people possible underneath one roof without getting into these, with my background in development, these cost harbingers or cost accelerators like steel and elevators and different things that we could keep it as simple of a build as possible. And so I came up with this idea, and in the interim, kind of was like trying to pitch it to Chris and Michael, and they loved it. But then COVID hit, and so I was supposed to meet with Mike, Big Mike, the dad, Father Mike, and Chris in Chicago, and COVID hit. So I kind of put it on the back burner. And then one day I was up there playing in the club championship at the Dunes Club, and Mike was there, and we'd gotten to know each other a little bit, and asked him if I could sit down while we were having lunch in between nines. And he said, yeah, sure. And the first question out of his mouth was, what is Valparaiso doing for affordable housing or workforce housing? And I said, well, not a whole lot, but I do have this idea, Mike, that I came up with. And this was, 4 years after that trip to Cabot, and we got to talking, and he loved it. And the next thing I know is a month and a half later, I'm flying out with Mike to talk to the city of Bandon, and they loved it. And long story kind of short, it's going to take some time. So Mike said, let's build it on Bandon's resort. And a couple of years later, we built it, and it's a highly it went the process was very arduous, but the end product and the goal that we were attempting to achieve went off like gangbusters. Costs came in line. People who are living there really enjoy it. And the whole thought to me was that, like, these people who live in these cool places, they choose to live there, but it's a town of 2,000 people or 3,000 people. Really high because it's on the coast. No apartments built since 1996, and I was thinking about them and just getting them underneath a roof and feeling comfortable and feeling like human beings rather than living in garages or moldy apartments, and and having some sort of respect for their guild. And Mike was in the same camp, that he wanted his people to feel good. They already had a staff village. And so we're looking for a more economical way to continue to house more and more employees. And the rubber met the road. I had this idea out of the goodness of my heart, but also a business plan. And the rubber met the road that I hadn't even considered, which was when the issue of employment and housing and retaining and keeping and attracting good employees was really becoming an issue for a lot of places all over the country. But in particular, in this case, I should say, for Bandon Dunes. And once it reached the, decision makers, that's when I realized, like, okay, I have a good product that meets a good need, because the people who make the financial capital decisions wanted this and needed this, and everybody was happy with how it turned out in the end.
This is obviously kind of a unique use case scenario in a couple of different regards, considering the location of Bandon Dunes and also the unique function and size of Bandon Dunes. But it's not necessarily unique to golf in that a lot of great resorts have sprung up in places that are substantially away, substantial drives away from city centers and certainly affordable housing, certainly quality housing. So, based on that, what is it kind of the model to take this to other places, or was this kind of the intent? Let's see, let's get this built, let's get this started, and then see where that takes us, and then find out the use cases or the relative value to employees, whether they're seasonal, whether they're permanent, because most of these places are 12-month places.
Yeah, so I'm relatively pragmatic. So this was just kind of a not a one-off. This was the use case, like you said, and it's a great, I mean, it's a great use case because if anybody ever wanted to come out and see it and get an understanding of it, Mike and Chris would be happy to talk to them about it. Obviously, I'm talking with news networks such as you, but what it's now transitioned into is that, yes, I want to take this on the road. And what we offer to, so first of all, I should backtrack and say that because of this success, me and Mike have now partnered and we are attempting to get a few mixed housing developments done in the city of Bandon that would help with their overall employment issues because they have issues at the schools with hiring, same issues. You know, attracting and retaining,
Yeah.
attracting because there's no housing and retaining because they need somewhere affordable to live for an extended period of time. So we're doing two, attempting to do two mixed housing developments of 50 and 80 homes with some apartments and meeting basically this price point that is attractive. And we're using not market values at all, we're using income levels. So we're trying to, you know, the dual income for a household meeting the rental rates and the home ownership rule of thirds kind of as the as our rule of thumb to basically hit income levels from, you know, 40,000 up to whatever. You know, if somebody wants to build a big expensive home, that's affordable to them. Affordability is such a fluid number
Yes.
and term that it's like, so we are based on trying to hit, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, and then up, you know, and whatever. But really having a bunch of homes in that range for those dual income based off of not necessarily, not at all market value, but those, what kind of return can we get based off of, so we're kind of eating some money quite or some profit in order to house people who are necessary to make these communities great. So that's the first part. The second part is that when I have reached out to many resorts, they've reached out to me and we're in talks in places in Nebraska and Wisconsin and Utah and potentially Florida. And for me, what I tell them, what I would tell your viewers right now is if you're listening to this and you own a resort, what we save in time, we save 2 to 3 years on the design process. We have a design. The guts stay the same. We can change the exterior to place make. So let's say you are in Florida, we can make it stucco on the outside, you know, but the guts stay the same. That's where a huge cost and time savings is. And again, the other thing is that not only can we get this thing up and running, basically approved, from a building approval, construction approval, obviously cities and going through all that is going to be what it's going to be. There's no around that. But once we're ready to go, we're ready to go. We're not taking, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to design something from scratch, brand new. We aren't taking all that time that it takes to come up with something and then value engineer it because you come up with something and it's $350,000 per unit. We build these at $100,000 per unit, and that's all in. That's dirt work, that's construction, that's infrastructure. It sits 32 beds, sits on 1/2 an acre. So you could put it behind a cart barn if you wanted to, if you owned a resort. The biggest hurdle that I face And I had this hurdle with Bandon Dunes, and I'm gonna have this hurdle till the day I die, and that's fine. Is coaching, teaching, whatever you want to call it, getting people to understand that at these resorts or anywhere in the country, that the workforce housing issue is their issue. As much as they want somebody to come in and do this, I am here to help. But somebody, a lot of developers and builders, they're looking for the low-hanging fruit of big cities, suburban. They're not coming out to these rural places because they're not willing to take the risk, nor do they have the time or the patience to deal with some of these local municipalities. That's where I come in. So that takes that off of their plate. But the other biggest thing is getting them to understand that it's their problem that nobody else is going to solve, though I'm here to help. And I can solve it. The other thing is the capital expenditure. Everybody who owns a business understands, that if you put capital here, it's not going there. So if you want your resort guests, your members, whatever, to have the best experience, you need the best employees. And at one of these buildings, like I said, is about $100,000 per bed to build. So it's $3.2 million, okay, all in. So that's a big capital chunk when they're like, well, we could use that to do this or do that. And the reality is, if you don't have the employees to run it and keep your membership happy or your guests happy, you're going to lose out on income. And you're not going to be able to hire, and it's going to be a ghost town. And it's going to be very tough on your management, your pro shops, your greenskeeping staff, if you're not able to provide housing that. Basically, almost the company town model we have to go back to for a lot of these things. And that's what I'm trying to do, but by doing it in as economical and effective way from a cost perspective and a land usage perspective as possible. So those are the big hurdles, but we have the solution to it all. My favorite solution that we offer is that, so we could obviously come in and build, and you give us the land, a little piece of land somewhere, because a lot of places have a lot of junky land, and even though it might be in a high value area, Elon Musk, Donald Trump, whoever isn't coming in and building a 5,000 square foot home at the back of your driving range, okay, or behind a cart barn or whatever, behind the snack facility. So we can build that there, and we can get the financing, and we can build it. The best way to do it, though, is that either they finance it and just have me project management, we use our model, and we build them, but we also are more than happy to come up with a purchase leaseback agreement where basically they finance the build, because it's a lot easier for them to use their cash or their line of credit or something than it is for me to come, all over the country, find a new bank, go through all the rigmarole of being like, who the heck is this guy? Get a line of credit to build something for $3.2 million. It's a lot easier for me to say, you guys build it. I'll run the project. You guys pay for it. And before everything gets done, we do a purchase leaseback agreement. So basically, you build it, use your capital, then I buy it back from you, and you get your capital back out of it. So actually, it's only a short-term use of capital. In this case, we have a master lease, and it is infinitely easier for a nobody to get and own a building and buy and get the financing to buy a building. When you come in, you say, yeah, I've got a 10-year lease here or a 15-year lease here for the whole building. Finance it for me. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's great. Banks are much more apt to give a loan to somebody who actually has agreements in place rather than like, oh, you're just a entrepreneurial builder, what kind of track record do you have? So that's my favorite way, is that a resort or a club finances it. And then if they want to, we'll buy it, we'll manage it, we'll keep it. And you guys just basically put whoever you want in there, and you get your capital back out.
Matt, this is a fascinating concept, and I think it probably deserves a little bit more depth to it than even we've given here. I'd like to continue the conversation about it. For folks who are interested, who've heard this and maybe in a position themselves to talk to you about what this could mean for them and their properties, how can they get a hold of you?
So you can go to our website. It's Dormy with a Y, Dormy development.com. If you go there, all the emails, there's like a hello and like a form to fill out that comes directly to me as well. My personal cell phone number is on that website. And the reason for that is because I want to have these talks with these high level managers who are going to be calling. So, like, you get a hold of me directly by going to the website and getting my phone number.
Well, Matt, thank you again for coming on and talking with me. That as we talked about ahead of time, affordable housing and kind of community housing, community development is really important to me from a past life. So this is really fascinating to hear at least kind of the high level in the background of this. And I know there's a lot more depth to it we can go into. So hopefully we can do that again sometime. So thank you again for being on with us.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you having me on.